Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news, recorded on Wednesday, the 15th of November. I'm Margaret.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Phil.
And your sound engineers this week are Martin and John. And as we have no new members or no donations, Brian will start us off with the news.
More than 30 jobs have been lost after a steel firm went into administration. The entire workforce at Kingfisher Industrial Management in Cradley Heath have been laid off, administrators have revealed. It is believed that 36 people have been made redundant by the firm. In a statement, the administrators, RSM Restructuring Advisory, LLP, said, Damien Webb, Philip Sykes and Diana Frango from RSM Restructuring Advisory were appointed as joint administrators of Kingfisher Industrial Management Limited on October the 9th, 2017. Prior to their appointment, we understand that all employees were made redundant by the company. We believe this was around 36 staff. Since appointment, the administrators have been working to realise assets for the benefit of creditors. The firm, which is based on Cradley Business Park in Overend Road, specialises in steel fabrications, including transfer chutes, cyclones, hoppers, vessels and process pipework. Cradley Heath Ward councillor Caroline White said, If the company does have to close after this, it would be a great shame to lose a local company that deals in the business that they do. It looks as though they do a lot for the local community, as in the pipework and things that they produce. It's a great shame for people to lose their jobs in such a manner. The business they deal in, you don't always find that around here. It's nearly always brought in from elsewhere, so it's a shame to lose a local company that does that kind of work for us. It hasn't been open that long by the looks of it, about 7 years, but it's still a shame to lose a company in that kind of business. It does say they are a worldwide company, so they do ship abroad. So if they're not being used by companies abroad, then it's a great shame, a great loss to the community. The firm's website states that the firm's aims are to grow a profitable business and pledges to encourage and empower staff to make a difference. Kingfisher Industrial Management declined to comment.
Beacon Centre for the Blind, a charity that is dedicated to supporting local people living with sightless, is celebrating a fundraising milestone. Its community lottery, the Golden Gate Superdraw, has been running since 2004 and has now raised £150,000 for the charity. Vicky Millichamp, Communications and Fundraising Manager at Beacon, explained, The Golden Gate Superdraw is a fantastic way to support our charity while being in with a chance of winning one of our 60 cash prizes every week. Players pay £1 per week and are allocated 10 numbers. So every £1 people spend, they have 10 chances of winning. Each week, one lucky player wins the top prize of £1,000. We are incredibly grateful that thanks to the generous support from our local community, our Golden Gate Superdraw has now raised an amazing £150,000 for Beacon over the past 13 years. As a local charity, we are dependent on the support and generosity of our local supporters. The Beacon Centre is located in Sedgley and provides support and advice to visually impaired people living in the Black Country. In the Black Country alone, there are over 36,000 people living with sight loss, and this figure is set to double to some 72,000 by 2050. Beacon provides advice and support to visually impaired people of all ages, ranging from helping people back into employment to providing social, sporting and educational facilities in its daycare centres in Sedgley and Stourbridge, and offering advice and guidance on aids and technologies available to help visually impaired people in their homes and at work. Joining the Beacon's Golden Gate Superdraw is an easy, fun way to support the charity while being in with a chance to win a cash prize each week. For more information about how to join the draw, call Beacon on 01902 880 111 or visit its website www.beaconvision.org.
A young role model has won national recognition for his extraordinary contribution to the city. Owen Perks was one of just 24 youngsters honoured with a British Citizens Youth Award for his incredible fundraising efforts. The 11-year-old was celebrating after judges were impressed with his positive impact within Wolverhampton. Hardip Bayer, Wolverhampton Store Director of Awards, partnered Specsavers, said, "Owen's story is truly inspiring. He is clearly dedicated in his mission to ease the lives of others and give his life and effort to local community. It's wonderful to see someone so young, and I hope he continues his work in the future." Inspirational under-16s from across the nation were commended for their work at a glitzy prize-giving ceremony at the Palace of Westminster last month. The initiative highlights the act of bravery, kindness and compassion carried out by some of the country's youngest stars. Owen received his accolade from dancing sensation Ashley Banjo, whose group won Britain's Got Talent. Mentor Jagri Posley, who nominated Owen for the award, said, "I have known Owen for several years and he's a caring, compassionate young man with a can-do attitude to making a positive difference to other people's lives. He often comes to me with a new fundraising idea because I have a lot of experience of doing charity work in the local area. Owen sees no challenge as too big and is constantly looking for new causes to raise awareness or funds within his community. He's very deserving of this award. Owen set off in his path to help others in 2015 when he shaved his shoulder-length hair and raised £560 for Teenage Cancer Trust. He went on to raise £420 with his cousin Caden during a sponsored walk to gather Christmas gifts for the care home where his grandfather worked. The Ormiston New Academy student later decided to help schoolboy Jordan Lees, who suffers from cerebral palsy and autism, to reach his dreams to go on holiday. Wolverhampton resident Owen raised £140 through selling sweet-tasting cakes and cookies, as well as by sitting on a box for 6 hours to show Jordan's restricted movements. Owen continued his fundraising mission, raising almost £1,000 for 5-year-old Tommy Brown after he lost both of his legs to meningitis. He strolled from Wolverhampton to Walsall, held a cake sale, dressed up, collected cash in donation buckets so Tommy could choose his own prosthetic legs. The youngster is currently volunteering at the city's Manor Soup Kitchen and recently braved Storm Brian for 24 hours sitting in a tent in his garden to raise cash to provide Christmas meals for Wolverhampton's homeless. Mother Rachel said, "He has a natural passion for helping others. I'm so proud of his achievements and his attitude to help other people. He really cares about making a difference to other people's lives."
An A&E doctor has denied sexual misconduct following an alleged incident in which he hugged female colleagues at Wolverhampton's New Cross Hospital. Dr. Mohammed Yassin, aged 30, was alleged to have been sexually aroused when he approached the student nurse and healthcare assistant. But at a medical tribunal, Yassin denied wrongdoing, claiming the woman may have been confused about his intentions during the night shift at Wolverhampton's hospital. Dr. Yassin, who was working as a locum, said he hugged the woman because he wanted to fit in and had seen other colleagues doing it. The Medical Practitioners Tribunal Service hearing was told the encounter happened on April the 2nd last year. The healthcare assistant, known as Miss B, who'd worked at the Trust since October 2015, was assisting an elderly patient to the toilet when Dr. Yassin approached her looking stressed. He asked if he could have a hug and, without waiting for a response, put his arms around her. She told the hearing, "He rubbed himself against me. It's not something that happens every time you go to work. As we hugged, I could feel him pushing on my leg and he was grinding up and down." The hearing was told Dr. Yassin later attended the clinical decision unit where student nurse Miss A. Said was working. The woman, who was 21 at the time, said, "He came right behind me and started to rub my shoulders. I remember meeting him once before that on a different area of the department on a different day. I went away to do some work for about 10 minutes, and when I came back, Dr. Yassin was still in that area. Dr. Yassin asked for a hug before hugging me. I was a bit reluctant, but I did agree to it. I accepted the hug, but I didn't hug him back. I hadn't been hugged by a male doctor before. I felt reluctant to make a complaint. It's a big thing to come forward, and it may have consequences. Dr. Yassin from Birmingham was reported after the two women spoke to each other about their experiences. He told the hearing that he was not sexually aroused and that the female staff were mistaken. He said, "When the complaint was made, I was upset and shocked. I don't even find these girls attractive. I felt hugging was just part of the culture at work. It was not something I was used to when I was brought up." Dr. Yassin denies sexual misconduct and the hearing continues.
A recruitment campaign by West Midland Ambulance Service to find paramedics of the future looks likely to set new records for the level of interest. Since the application for a student paramedic opened on NHS Jobs, just over 21,000 people have viewed the job description and person's specification, with more than 450 actually applying for the roles and another 850 still working on their applications. Last December, a similar advert brought in 10,000 views and 28 applications. Louise Harris, the Ambulance Services Recruitment Manager, said, "After the success of TV programmes like Ambulance, 999, On the Front Line and Inside the Ambulance Service, particularly in the West Midlands, has never been so high profile. There is no doubt that we have seen a huge level of interest in the role of paramedics and also those staff who work in our control rooms. Our social media channels on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram have seen loads of people asking for more information. It is great news that so many people have taken the time to look at the role of student paramedic. We have seen people apply from all different communities, but also people from their teens to their 50s. Many who are looking at a complete career change or even a second career change. From our perspective, this is excellent news because it means we get a really good variety of people from all walks of life, area, ethnic group and community, which can only be good for the service. Applicants need to have at least 5 GCSEs, grades A to C, including English, maths and science, and a single A level or equivalent in any subject, and must also have at least applied for a C1 driving licence. For further information about the qualifications required to be a paramedic with West Midlands Ambulance Service, call the recruitment team on 01384 215 896 or email recruitment@wmass.nhs.uk.
Armed police officers have begun stopping and searching cars on busy rush hour roads over fears of a terror attack on a Christmas market. The operation launched in Birmingham ahead of the city's popular Frankfurt Christmas market has seen large numbers of officers pulling over and checking vehicles and pedestrians. West Midlands Police say the pre-planned operation is not a result of any specific threat or intelligence. However, the move comes in the wake of a series of terrorist attacks in which vehicles have mown down pedestrians after a car driver was arrested in Toulouse, France, after deliberately driving into a group of students outside the school, injuring 3. In December last year, 12 people died and 56 were injured when Islamic terrorist Anis Amri ploughed a truck into a Christmas market outside the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church in Berlin. Concrete barriers have been placed all around Birmingham Frankfurt Christmas market in attempt to stop a similar attack. Superintendent Andy Parsons, or West Midland Police, said These checks are to offer reassurance to our communities and those who plan to attend our world-famous Christmas market. Officers will be stopping vehicles and pedestrians during the afternoon and evening, and this will continue throughout the festive season. There will be a mixture of armed and unarmed and plainclothes officers patrolling the city. If you see them, please feel free to talk to them and say hello. This is your police service and they are here to keep you safe. We remain hugely grateful for the overwhelming public support shown to our officers and their mission to prevent crime. It is really important that we tackle all crime together. So if you see something or hear anything suspicious, we need to know so we can try to do something about it. West Midlands Police tweeted, "Our officers are out on patrol in Birmingham city centre as we prepare for the arrival of the festive market on the 16th of November. Patrols will continue throughout the festive period. If you see our officers armed or unarmed, please say hello."
War memorials in the Black Country are set to be given Grade 2 listed status as part of First World War commemorations. A decision has been made by the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, on the advice of Historic England, to make the move as the sites reach their centenary. The memorials include two from Dudley, with the Quarry Bank Peace Memorial and Garden at Stevens Park being given Grade 2 status, while the Starbridge War Memorial at Mary Stevens Park is moving up to Grade 2 star status from Grade 2. Sedgley councillor and UKIP MEP Bill Etheridge said, "I think it's brilliant that war memorials are getting the respect they deserve. They are the place where people can remember and pay tribute to those who made the ultimate sacrifice, so this news is welcome." Two Sandwell memorials, the Oldbury Cenotaph and the Bearwood War Memorial, are also set to become Grade 2 listed. Sandwell councillor Peter Allen, who is a member of the Tipton Royal British Legion group, said, "People in Sandwell are very supportive of Remembrance Day and they are protective of their war memorials. This is very welcome news because anything that can offer these sites protection and support is good news." In Solihull, the Hampton in Arden War Memorial, Shirley War Memorial and Elmden War Memorial are being honoured, while Willenhall War Memorial in Walsall will also be given Grade 2 status. Lord Ashton of Hyde, the First World War Minister, said, "As we enter the final year of our First World War centenary commemorations, we want to ensure the bravery and sacrifice of those who served are never forgotten. Local war memorials are a poignant reminder of how the war affected our communities and of those who never came home. I encourage everyone to visit their local war memorial and learn more about their connection to this pivotal point in our history." Historic England has pledged to list a total of 2,500 war memorials over the centenary of the First World War as part of its First World War Memorial Listing Programme. Duncan Wilson, Chief Executive of Historic England, said, "These memorials were an important indicator of how society was feeling and reacting as the war progressed and as the loss of life increased to unprecedented levels. They were not just a focal point for people's grief, but also seen as a symbol to those still fighting." Outside of the Black Country, the Amington Cemetery War Memorial Cross in Tamworth will also be honoured. Although the majority of First World War memorials were not constructed until after the end of the war, memorials began to be erected prior to this as a way to provide the community with focus for their grief. Some of these were by individuals to commemorate family members, others by local communities to honour the sacrifices being made or for specific events and places related to the war effort.
A 64-year-old man was severely assaulted and tied up with wire during a robbery at a Lower Gornal pub. Two masked men entered the Black Bear pub in Deepdale between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. on Sunday, where they attacked the pub owner. They pushed their way into the pub after the owner went to investigate a noise at the rear of the property, police believe. One of the men is believed to have threatened the man with a gun, while the other was holding a scalpel-like instrument. The 64-year-old man was severely assaulted and tied with wires and put into a cabinet. before the men made off with a quantity of cash. It is also believed the men deliberately turned a gas hob on before their departure. Police are continuing to investigate the incident, and anyone with information is asked to call police on 101.
A council incentive scheme aimed encouraging empty homeowners to sell off or rent out their properties had a much, much lower take-up than expected, with just two people set to benefit. The £50,000 project was launched 6 months ago by Wolverhampton Council to tackle the city's housing problem. There are 2,289 empty homes in the city. It offered owners up to £500 to sell homes or rent them out through Wolverhampton Homes, which has a long waiting list of families. But despite it attracting interest from 326 property owners, just two are going through the process to receive the cash incentive. According to a report going before the council's cabinet resource panel next week, 42 further homeowners could still take advantage of the benefit. 20 are considering selling their homes, while 22 are considering renting through Wolverhampton Homes. The report said take up the 500 incentive has been much lower than anticipated. Most respondents did not meet the criteria or had plans for the property, which excluded the property from the incentive. Spokesman Oliver Burritt said, "The intention of the incentive was to target owners who needed a catalyst to make a decision about their empty residential property. To qualify for the scheme, properties must have been empty for more than 6 months. And the ones that have been left empty for more than 2 years have been targeted first. Strict criteria also had to be met for the property to qualify for the incentive to ensure the exclusion of properties being refurbished for owner occupation, private renting, and those where a sale was already progressing. To date, the pilot programme has led to constructive engagement with 326 owners, including 126 residents, who, following contact from the council, have informed us their property is now occupied. The council is now looking to continue the project, but reducing its budget from £50,000 to £10,000. Mr. Burritt added, Cabinet Resources Panel on November the 14th has been asked to authorise a budget of up to £10,000 for the financial year 2018-19 to continue with a targeted approach to engaging with owners of long-term empty properties. Analysis done on the responses to the project found the majority of homes were empty due to ongoing refurbishment for private rent. This was followed by the homes waiting to be sold, a lack of finance and refurbishment for owner occupation.
A hospital worker has admitted disclosing private details of patients' medical records. Claire Francis, who worked as a coding officer at Dudley Group NHS Trust, accessed her friend's medical records dozens of times and also disclosed information about a baby. Miss Francis, aged 38, of Slater Close in Cradley Heath, was fined £780 at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court. District Judge David Webster said, "They are despicable offences which were a breach of trust. I hope you are ashamed of yourself." Miss Francis, a mother of two, pleaded guilty to two offences of knowingly or recklessly obtaining personal data between July 2005 and November 2014. Prosecuting, Miss Pennington said Miss Francis accessed the data of her friend, Tricia Gailey-Rose, around 56 times. Miss Gailey-Rose was a neighbour and friend, but the court heard that their relationship has since broken down. She complained to the Trust that she believed her records had been accessed and an investigation began. Miss Francis also disclosed information about an unknown baby, the court heard. Miss Pennington said Tricia was her neighbour and friend, but the relationship has broken down. Ms. Francis left the trust in 2015 after working there for 13 years. Since then, she gained new employment but was made redundant and is seeking job seeker's allowance. The offences to which you have pleaded guilty are offences which can only be punished by a fine, Mr. Webster said. If more serious powers were available to the court, I would be considering these. Often patients have to give doctors embarrassing personal information. They do so in the knowledge that all is strictly confidential. When this is breached, it strikes at the heart of patient and doctor confidentiality. Defending, Mr. Jerry Dahey said, she pleaded guilty ahead of the trial. There wasn't any financial motive. Ms. Francis was just concerned about people who, at the time, she was friends with. Ms. Gailey Rose, the victim, said, your medical record is the most sensitive data that can be held about you. Knowing this information has been inappropriately accessed on more than 50 occasions makes me feel immensely violated and vulnerable. I can honestly say the past 2 years have been the most traumatic of my life.
Bin collection chaos will continue for at least another month after a blaze at Walsall's Main Waste Depot. Residents have had to put up with delayed weekly collections since the fire at Friars Road Household Waste Recycling Centre in Bloxwich. Now Walsall Council bosses say households can expect another 4 weeks of disruption as repairs are done to the depot, which it was feared may have to be demolished. Walsall Council Clean and Green Chief Councillor Christopher Jones said, the fire really hasn't helped and it has directly contributed to miscollections. Everything is centred around Friars Road. It is the centre of the universe for our waste. It couldn't have come at a worse time. I would just say to residents, bear with us for your collection when your collection is missed. Don't bring it in and we'll collect it the next day. The cause of the fire on November the 5th at the depot, where trucks and crews are based, has been confirmed as accidental. Councillor Jones added, we are hoping that within 4 weeks it could be up and running again. Our biggest fear was that the place had to be knocked down due to the damage to the structure. But I understand we can refurbish it. It has been refurbished up to modern standards. It was an accidental fire. All of the CCT has been checked. The last operative locked up at 5:20 p.m. and the fire started around 20 minutes later. It wasn't arson. The public tip at the same site reopened to the public on Saturday, although it is now only available up until 4 p.m. every night as opposed to the previous time of 5 p.m. The time change is part of a wider plan to increase availability during the summer months. The council is unable to use the site to deposit bin collections from around the borough. Instead, household rubbish is having to be shuttled to Viola's site in Four Ashes, while recyclables are being transported to Green Star Environmental in Aldridge.
Two Black Country families swapped their homes for a week as part of a television social experiment. And the experience on Channel 5 show, Rich House, Poor House, proved eye-opening for both the Lee and Allsound households. Single mother Claire Lee from Willenhall and her four children moved into the Allsound's £650,000 home in Tettenhall. The Allsounds made the opposite trip for a week, swapping their five-bedroom, four-bathroom detached home for the Lee's £110,000, three-bedroom, one-bath semi in Willenhall. Cardiologist Maharush Alsund, 54, and his paediatrician wife Rana, 49, left Syria for the UK in 2000 to find a better life for their four children. As well as swapping houses, the family also switched budgets for a week. This meant the Lees had to spend the Allsounds' £3,000 a week budget, to spend a whopping 17 times more than the £170 they typically live on. On her first day living in the Allsounds' spacious home, Claire visited Essington Farm Shop and splurged £53 on a steak, nearly a third of what she would normally spend in 1 week. Meanwhile, the Allsons had to get used to sharing one bathroom between six people. Claire, 43, bought two takeaways on her first night, £140 worth of toys and a £500 watch for her eldest son, just to use up the cash. She struggled to spend the huge weekly budget, although relished the opportunity to splash out on Jordan 23, Nathan 17, Rose 10 and Kai 9. However, the extent of the financial disparity hit home with Claire as the show progressed. The school finance clerk became emotional at the thought of what she hadn't been able to provide on her salary, crying when she saw two of her children given a piano lesson she simply could not afford. "This is something that I would like to give them, but I can't," Claire said. Claire was impressed by her counterpart Rana's bid to work full-time, while still being a hands-on mother of four. But she said she found their lives far removed. Claire said, "I cannot comprehend that a job pays that much money, and that at the end you still have much more left over at the end of the week. I'm not saying that the Allsounds haven't worked incredibly hard to get to that position they're in, but to help your children however they want and be able to do it, it must be lovely to give them the best start in life." The Allsons admitted their worries over the crime rate in their temporary home, with Father Maharus concerned to hear from locals who told them they carry knives for protection. It proved eye-opening for the family from Tettenhall. Middle daughter Zane said, "I think today has made me realise that Claire must be handling her money very well, or struggling to provide her children with the things that they need and should be able to have. I'm so grateful. I have been sheltered from my whole life. I'm really lucky." And the show was actually aired on Thursday, the 9th of November. So on that last item, I will now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Margaret.
It's goodbye from Brian.
And goodbye from Phil.